This is Anya.
And this is Peter.
And we're from Rock and Roll High School every first and third Wednesday at 8 p.m.
And you're listening to WGXC, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM. Radio for open ears, baby. Wow.
Every Thanksgiving, our friends and family at WGXC like to spend the holiday together with some audio traditions. At midnight each year, we tune into William Burroughs' Thanksgiving Prayer, and then tune in the WGXC Morning Show on Thanksgiving Day for some other holiday audio traditions, like an excerpt from WKRP's Turkey Drop. We'll hear Dan Seward from the Battlefield Earth Show and his annual turkey story, as well as Rush Limbaugh's The True Story of Thanksgiving. And of course, we'll hear Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant, and at 10 a.m. we'll have a special interview with Ron Pahalski interviewing Alice Brock from Western Massachusetts, the Alice from Alice's Restaurant, on the radio at WGXC. Cella Graham will be live in the Hudson studio on Thanksgiving Day for the WGXC afternoon show from 4 to 6 p.m. And at 6 p.m. All Together Now, we'll feature several stories about local food banks, free fridges, and other ways you can donate to help the hunger situation in the Hudson Valley. So tune in the radio Thanksgiving Day to WGXC 90.7 FM, your creative, solar-powered community radio station.
Wayfarm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wayfarm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the great ebb tide river also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jenny Getty of Red Hook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that the 4th Judicial Department, a mid-level appellate court in New York, has reinstated a rule allowing the state health department to order someone to involuntarily isolate or quarantine to control a highly contagious disease. That overturns a 2022 decision by State Supreme Court Justice in Cattaraugus County, who found the rule violates the constitutional requirement for a separation of powers between the legislative and the executive branches when promulgating rules as severe as involuntary isolation. Republicans behind the lawsuit said they plan to appeal the decision to the State Court of Appeals, the state highest court. The November 17th ruling was on a technicality, as Republican officials filing the suit did not sufficiently establish why they were so severely harmed, and that the trial court failed to adequately rule on the merits of whether the petitioners had a right to bring the case in the first place. Assemblymember Chris Teague, who represents Greene and Schoharie counties, was one of the Republicans behind the lawsuit. The Republicans released a statement saying, and I quote, "This has been a David versus Goliath fight from the beginning on many levels, so it's not surprising that the state, with its limitless resources, has effectuated a win this round. We will never stop fighting for New Yorkers against government overreach," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Catherine Doyle reports at NBC News that Representative Elise Stefanik is again working for former President Donald Trump, filing new documents to her judicial ethics complaint against the judge overseeing Trump's civil fraud trial in New York. She amended her complaint by attaching the mistrial motion filed by Trump's attorney accusing Judge Arthur Engoron of bias. Engoron ruled against the motion. On November 17th, Stefanik said the motion was, and I quote, wrongly denied, end quote, and that, and I quote, a week ago I filed an ethics complaint against Manhattan Judge Arthur Engoron for his partisan antics, bias, and railroading of President Trump. After my complaint, a New York appellate court smacked down Judge Engoron for his blatantly unconstitutional gag order. Today, I am supplementing my ethics complaint against Judge Engoron with examples of even more of his egregious misconduct after he just wrongly dismissed President Trump's motion for a mistrial, end quote. Engoron said the arguments Trump's lawyers made in the motion were, and I quote, utterly without merit, end quote. Engoron is presiding over a $250 million civil lawsuit about fraud in the former president's business. He has already ruled that the fraud existed and is now deciding how much to fine Trump and his business. Read more about this story at NBC News. WNYT reports that the Hudson Police Department is now saying there was no attempted kidnapping last week, and that the incident they warned local citizens about was a misunderstanding. Police originally said a man in a white van asked a child walking home from school to get in the vehicle. But on November 18th, police found the driver and learned that a language barrier led to a misinterpretation of events. The driver, with a thick foreign accent, says he was telling the child about a dropped item rather than directing them into the van. There were many posts and comments on social media about the incident last week after police posted a warning. Read more about this story at WNYT. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, November 22nd. Local early morning temperatures have clawed their way above freezing and range from 34 degrees in Tannersville to 40 in Copake. Regional average soil temperature is 40 degrees, and we have an official snow report of 1 inch of snow in Catskill. Everybody should be above freezing by now, but some sheltered areas may have ice or snow still around, so be vigilant when driving or walking around this morning. Give yourself some extra time. Surface ice doesn't believe in a fair warning. It's going to be nasty out there, so protect from the elements. Rain should come to an end for everyone by noon. Those to the west get a break a little sooner. We see a high of 49 at 2 p.m. Overnight, things dry out and we see a low of 39. Thanksgiving will be windy with a high of 48 and will end with a mostly sunny afternoon. Travel should be okay all day, assuming people don't become a factor. Overnight, we dip to 35 degrees, and Saturday will still be breezy with a high of 42. Sunday gets colder but stays dry. We see a high of 37. If you're getting ready for tomorrow, right now is the time to make up checklists, and not just for you. If a guest says, "Can I bring anything?" let them know exactly what you need, forwarding them a list if necessary. And that also counts for the pre-meal troublemakers. Have them clean pots and pans while they wait to keep them busy. And tune in tomorrow for the ultimate Thanksgiving tip. Sunset today will be at 4:17 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:51 a.m. Looking way up, we see Earth entered an accelerated plasma wind, causing a geomagnetic disturbance, which could translate into auroras overnight. Plasma winds will be average at 541 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. X-class flare chances are at 5%. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible, even overnight, due to the increased solar wind. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 138, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Listen to what the flower people say. Ah, listen, it's getting louder every day.
Some to the rivers and some to the sea.
Some we observe today, not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom. Symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike, that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
It's 83 degrees in Dallas at 11 o'clock.
From the world, the nation, and the Texas News Triangle, this is KLIF Hourly News.
United Nations Secretary General Thant says there is no justification for arresting Katanga President Chombe in Elizabethville. Successful stationary test of Titan II intercontinental ballistic missile has been made at Vandenberg Air Force Base. The largest student demonstration to date against Negro James Meredith has been broken up by University of Mississippi campus police.
At the tone, standard time will be 11, 29, and 30 seconds.
And now, a shortcut back to Dallas.
I was in the, oh my God, 10 years ago today.
One time or other, everybody listen to me. You lose somebody you love, but that's no reason for you to break down and cry. I said, hey, everybody, everybody, everybody's had a lonely moment. Everybody, everybody, everybody's had the blues.
I was in school. I was in the 7th grade. In a math class, and I remember they rang the bells early at the end of the math class. It was the end of the 8th period. It was a Friday afternoon, and I said, oh, good, we're going to get to go home early.
At the tone, standard time will be 11:42. Exactly.
Yeah!
Process of building an office building on 58th Street when I heard about it.
Now hear this.
KLIF presents the world's greatest disc jockey, Ross Knight.
Oh, boy.
Introduced myself in Paris by saying that I was the man who had accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. I'm getting that somewhat that same sensation as I travel around Texas. Nobody wonders what Lyndon and I wear. I'll put it on in the White House on Monday. If you'll come up there, you'll have a chance to see it then.
They said it couldn't be done. They said nobody
could
do it.
Hold it. Stop the music. What couldn't be done?
I was in study hall, and the study hall teacher came down, and I had, of course, several friends who went to the parade. You could have the option of going, getting out of school to see the parade or not, and I had work to do, so I stayed at school.
At the tone, standard time will be 12, 7, and 30 seconds.
Well, I remember how being terribly shocked and incredible, the whole thing, that this sort of thing could happen in the United States.
I think Kennedy was about the one that made me realize that there was an America and maybe there is hope in America. I think it was maybe through him that I really got the inspiration. My goal was to come to America, but like that was through him.
Okay by me in America, everything's free in America, or as my feet in America. Automobiles in America, Romeo steel in America, wires for wheel in America, every big deal in America. I like the city of San Juan. I know about you can get on. Everyone there will give big cheer. Everyone there will have mood. Yeah.
Yeah! That's a swinger, BMR Bell Ringer. Love it. That's going to be on the Good Guy Survey any minute right now. And the name and claimer winner on Rooftop Singers was, let's see, congratulating Dennis Dallas of 262 Hoyme Street. Hoyme? H-O-Y-M-E Street in Nutley, New Jersey. Oh, Scooter, I love this one. This is Freddie Scott. Oh, hey, girl.
Hey, girl, I want you to know I'm gonna miss you so much if you go. And hey, girl, I tell you no lie, something deep inside of me's going to die. If you say so, if this is goodbye.
At the tone, standard time will be 12:19. And 50 seconds.
All I remember was that I was at Antioch in my room. And that's all I remember. That's how I heard, and I remember just that's all.
When you wake up early in the morning, feeling sad like so many of us do, I'm a little soul, make life your goal, and surely come to you.
Pack up all your cares and all.
Go, guys.
We'll say hi when you feel low. We're the Good Guys.
O'Brien and Harrison start your day.
Then come Spector.
Oh,
hi, babe.
We're the Good Guys.
After Jack, we'll tell you what you're needing.
Yeah, yeah.
Dandy Dan and then B. Mitchell Reed swing.
1, 2, 6 until the dawn. Here, Don Davis, swing along. Good guys, that's all.
Yeah!
I really don't recall housework, no doubt.
At the tone, standard time will be 12:20. Exactly.
64 degrees, Scooter.
Now put yourself in a handsome new car, a 63 personality car. Smart car, think twice, full size and low price.
Oh, I was in school. I had just slapped a teacher.
This is KLIF 1190.
Dallas.
KLIF 1190. Whoopee!
10 years ago, working at the AMP on Lockhart Turnpike. I was a bag boy. I remember I was putting some bags into this lady's car, and she had the radio on in her boat.
I said, take it easy, baby, I worked all day, and my feet feel just like lead. You got my shirt tail flying all over the place, and the sweat popping out of my head. She said, hey, Bossa Nova, baby, keep on working, for this ain't no time to quit. She said, go, Bossa Nova, baby, keep on dancing, I'm about to have myself a fit. Bossa Nova.
First news first. We take you now to one of the KLIF mobile news units for a news story of special interest, brought to you by Zenith, America's number one TV value.
I was riding my bike, and I went and I bought some sneakers after I heard it on the radio. Because I needed sneakers. I didn't care.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, baby, where can I go?
Louie Louie, number two in New York, and I'll be back after the news.
Everybody's twisted. Everybody's twisted.
To the home of the good guys, home of the hits, WMCA Radio 57. Ma!
At the tone, standard time will be 12:29:20.
I was on the stage at MacArthur Theater, and we were doing a dress rehearsal of Alice in Wonderland, which was pretty far out, and it all just came to a halt, and that's where I was.
I was downtown in Yellow Springs, Ohio, trying to purchase some food at a small delicatessen. When I heard the news, I was in the small delicatessen, now defunct.
From 1190 KLIF in Dallas, and here's an angle for Johnny Angel.
Johnny.
People ask later, was Jacqueline Kennedy pretty, or how she was dressed? I have no idea of those. I was so fascinated by seeing the President of the United States that I couldn't take my eyes off of him.
Johnny Angel, how I want him, how I tingle when he passes by. Every time he says hello, my heart begins to fly.
And when that first shot went off, I thought it was a backfire from a motorcycle. But when his hands went up to the side, then I realized, my God, he has been shot.
Diamond, 3 pennies after 7 with your leader, BMR, in the Wide, Wide, Weird World. And stand by, you could be a winner of the Musical Love Letters Contest, maybe. Upcoming, a reactivated smashback, Leslie Gore, It's Your Party. Rooftop Singers and Hey Girl, and the hits keep coming here with BMR. And here's one right now. These are the Chiffons.
At the tone, standard time will be 12:30:30.
I have the power as the High Priest of Dallas Radio from Master Control Central to bring every broadcasting channel through 1190. So you need not turn your radio to any other broadcasting medium in the Dallas area. Friends, this is not for real if you're suing. In case any scientists are listening from Southern Methodist University, I will not reveal any more of the Weird Beard's secret power. This is not Orson Welles. Because, my friends, this is a complete hoax. My first venture in sound will be to bring in KIXL. Known to the Monavani set as Kixel. The 1190 scanner is turned on now.
I was getting out of a class. I was in a private school in New Jersey, and I just remember walking up the stairs from the school area to an area where there were many student cars. And in a typical fashion for that era, 1963, everybody was sitting in their cars, hanging out the cars.
Just a few minutes ago, the President of the United States turned. There were three loud, reverberating explosions. Nobody moved. Everyone seemed stunned. A few seemed to look around, wondering who has the firecrackers. Then suddenly, the Secret Service men sprang into action. The convertible bearing the President and Mrs. Kennedy sped away. And officers, both plainclothes and uniformed, seemed to spring from everywhere at once, guns drawn, ordering people to lie flat. There are two witnesses who were near the President's car at the time of the explosions who say that shots were fired. From which upper window, we do not know. We do not and cannot confirm the reports at this time that the President has been shot. One witness says he definitely was shot, that he was hit twice, that he saw the President slump in his seat. As I say, this is not confirmed at this time. From where I am, the police have two witnesses. They are bringing them in now. I'm in
in the Texas School Book Depository building. They're bringing some witnesses in now. We will try to learn further and relay word to the station. Stay tuned for further details. This is Pierce Allman from the Texas School Book Depository building for WFAA News.
And that's how I found out about it, right then and there. It was somebody had heard it on a radio.
And I was sent out to the principal's office, and I was told, come back and see me tomorrow. The president has been shot, so we can't deal with you today. And that was the day I got off seeing them tomorrow, because I never showed up again.
I remember, you know, like it was basically a radio thing.
I was at boarding school, and school was just about empty because we got that weekend off instead of Thanksgiving. And I walked into the common room, and the TV set was blank, but on, there were a whole bunch of people standing around. And coming out of the TV set was just a sound, the guy saying, and then Jackie said, oh no, Jack, oh no.
At the tone, standard time will be 12:58 and 50 seconds.
I was in the army when that happened. Maybe a day or so later, then I realized it was President Kennedy who was killing him. Then it dawned on me who the dude was, you know, when they started comparing him with his Abe Lincoln, who was shot in almost the same manner, right?
And they rang the bells early, and we all went back to our homeroom, and the principal got on the public address system. He made an announcement. And our principal had a great flair. He was a great showman. He liked to make long speeches. He was very flowery on the public address system. And we all thought it was going to be another speech. Don't talk in the halls. We're going to dismiss you early. So the teachers are going to have a conference. But this isn't really an early dismissal. This will be something very special. So he got on the public address system, and he said, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, is dead.
I was at work at the insurance company, and I got off for lunch. This is before I had heard about it. I got off at lunchtime at 1 o'clock.
At the tone, standard time will be 1 o'clock. Exactly.
Was like the light was out in the middle of the day, and no, was too much. Yes, I was at Penthouse K in 65 West 55th Street.
It was raining terribly. It was almost black. It wasn't. It never became day the whole day. I remember that more than anything else. I was in my house and I had the television on. And I remember that it was a day that was not a day. It was always night.
And then the principal, Mr. Oxenhorn, had a minute of silence. And even with that occasion, even the president was dead, we couldn't keep quiet for a minute.
What was I doing when Kennedy was shot? I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, in the hall, like, going to the bathroom or something. And somebody came out and told me, I was in the hall, you know, somebody came and told me, he was shot. And I went to an audiovisual room and looked at it on television.
And I went to go pay on my bill at Outlets on the third floor. And I went up on the third floor to pay, and everyone was quiet, you know. And this woman comes out from the back and she's screaming, Kennedy's been shot! Kennedy's been shot, you know. Everybody in the store just was quiet. When I came out, it was all quiet outside.
And from there, being away from home and being away from relatives and any feeling of security, I was thrown completely, being so far away and being so far removed and not really being aware of what was happening. They permitted us at that point to glue ourselves in front of the television, and mostly everybody did.
At the tone, standard time will be 1:08 and 40 seconds.
I remember that weekend in New York. Everybody was so stunned. At the time, I lived in a tenement with an old Irish landlady who was terribly moved by the whole event because of Kennedy's being Irish. And in fact, it was an Irish neighborhood. Everybody put out signs of mourning.
I remember I was putting up some bags into this lady's car. And she had the radio on, and the bulletin came on and said the president's been shot. And I sat in the car with her, and we listened, you know, like, paralyzed. And then she had to leave, and I you know, the next car came, and I said, did you hear the president's been shot? She, the lady said no, or whoever was driving the car. And they put on the radio, and we just kept listening. You know, all the people, it was really incredible. And then I told my boss, I said, did you hear the president's been shot? And he said, the president of what? And I said, the United States. Just kept going like that until I got out of work. And when I got home, I watched it on TV, see what happened.
We should have noticed that there weren't too many people in the restaurant, you know, like, or that there suddenly weren't too many people coming in, but we didn't really notice it. And we went outside and then went up to the movies. And we went to the movie we wanted to see, and we went in to pay, and the woman said, movie's closed. And we said, why? And she said, the president's been shot.
10 years ago, I was at Cornell University. I was an alumni returning for a weekend of merriment. Eating in the cafeteria, someone said the president had been shot. I said, oh, come on. I don't believe that. And lo and behold, I went upstairs, and everyone was around this television set. People were crying. Walter Cronkite was crying. Everybody was crying. And John F. Kennedy was indeed dead.
We were going home in the bus, and we were all screaming. Then I got home. My mother was out in front. She was crying. Everybody was crying.
The announcement of his death came over the loudspeaker in the bottom of the student union there in Houston Hall. And cars were stopping in the middle of the street in Philadelphia. Buildings had their doors flung open, and people poured out into the streets, and every third person on the street was in tears. The city came to a standstill, and I went downtown and sat inside a synagogue for a while. I was really frightened.
Then the principal came on, and he said, everybody home. And that was it, and I went home. And I hurried home, and my roommate was taking it out of class test, and I said, Kennedy's been shot. She said, oh, my God, that's terrible. Let me finish this test. So she finished her test.
I was in an English class, and the teacher came in delayed, and made an announcement and tried to go on with the class. And after 10 minutes, one of the guys got up, was freshman or sophomore English in college, and said, you know, talking about English really is just so trivial compared to what's happening. And the teacher said, I agree. And we all left.
These friends of mine came over to my room, and I think I had gotten food for my birthday in the mail. And we had this big, like, telling all these horrible things in our lives for some reason came out, you know, and it was very, it was a very, you know, like, cathartic weekend. Like, everybody for some reason was drinking a lot and talking about their lives, you know, and it was quite something.
Oh, I was in the basement of a sculpture studio, taking out a piece of cast, and when the news came, we were in the pot shop, and when the news came, somebody came in the room and said Kennedy was shot, we all stopped. And the boy who was making a pot, the pot cracked. It was on the wheel, and he pushed his hand into it, and he made a stand for it and glazed it, and I have it in my house.
I was sitting in my fourth grade class in a Catholic grammar school, listening to a fat old art teacher who had been in for the last 15 minutes, and when she heard it, she banged her head up against the blackboard. I remember very vividly when it came over the microphone.
What was I doing when I heard the news? I was teaching nursery school at the time, and I got a call from my friend Louise, who was working for the French Cultural Information Service, and they had a APY or photo machine or whatever it is, you know, where they get the news ahead of everybody else. And she called to say that Kennedy had been shot. But at that point, of course, nobody could believe it was a fatal thing. It was just incredible that somebody in Texas would take a pot shot at the president.
There would be things like fear about Dallas, you know, as being the city, about our town, you know, stuff like that. And the fact that we knew exactly where it was made it very personal. You know, very, you know, we knew the street, you know.
So then these reports kept coming in. And at the time I had three roommates. There were four of us living together. One of them just sat there and typed a paper and kept saying, oh, gee, that's too bad.
And my teacher, Mrs. Goldman, she jumped. She actually jumped. She jumped. Huh. And all of us just looked at each other. And when you're in seventh grade, it's hard, really. You somehow,
it's difficult to take, and you laugh.
I was sitting in the last class about 10 minutes. And there was a notice, President Kennedy has been shot, critically wounded, and everyone was gasping and crying. Then he got outside and heard he was dead, and then he wasn't dead. You know, they caught the guy, they didn't caught the guy.
I was wearing a gray sweater, and it was cold out, so I put on this orange cardigan, and I went to tell my friend Judith, and she was shocked, and everybody kept saying, why are you wearing an orange cardigan?
Well, then I remember that night, we went... Of all, it was just so obscene, I couldn't stand it. We went to a Howard Johnson's for dinner in Trenton, New Jersey. I don't know how or why we ended up doing that, but I recall that it really upset me.
To sit and wonder why, babe, it don't matter anyhow. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe, if you don't know by now. When the rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window and I'll be gone. You're the reason I'm traveling. Don't think twice, it's all right. It ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. A light I never knowed. It ain't no use in turning on your light, babe. I'm on the dark side of the road. Still I wish there were something you would do or say to try and make me change my mind and stay. We never did too much talking anyway, so don't think twice, it's alright. I'm walking down that long, lonesome road, babe, where I'm bound, I can't tell. But goodbye is too good a word, gal, so I'll just say fare thee well. I ain't saying you treated me unkind, you could have done better, but I don't mind. You just sort of wasted my precious time, but don't think twice, it's alright. It ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, like you never did before. It ain't no use in calling out my name, gal, I can't hear you anymore.
I'm a-thinking and a-wondering all the way down the road. I once loved a woman, a child I'm told. I gave her my heart, but she wanted my soul.
A Shortcut Back to Dallas was produced by Peter Beauchamp.
Answer the phone.
I was in the, oh my God, 10 years ago today.
And I don't want historians 10 years from now to say, these were the years when the tide ran out for the United States. I want them to say, these were the years when the tide came in. These were the years when the United States started to move again. That's the question before the American people, and only you can decide what you want this country to be. What you want to do with the future. I think we're ready to move.
A coalition of New York environmental groups finds dredging the Hudson River of toxic chemicals has failed. The report from Friends of a Clean Hudson River finds PCB chemical levels are higher than anticipated. The Environmental Protection Agency dredged the river between 2009 and 2015 for 30 years' worth of chemicals General Electric dumped into it. Dredging is typically an effective way to clean pollutants out of a river, but Ned Sullivan, with the group Scenic Hudson, describes why the EPA's effort was ineffective.
The problem is that EPA struck a deal with GE that was too much in favor of the polluter. They didn't require GE to clean up enough contamination.
Other federal agencies noted this. A 2015 report found GE didn't do enough dredging and the EPA didn't force the company to do more. Sullivan says the first step to true remediation is having the EPA admit this finding and prepare for more extensive dredging. Some 200 miles of the Hudson River are considered a Superfund site due to the high amount of contamination, and 40 miles of the Upper Hudson are GE's responsibility. Friends of a Clean Hudson River's assessment finds current sediment recovery rates aren't likely to allow fish to recover naturally. Sullivan notes the impacts this will have.
PCBs are a forever chemical. They don't naturally break down in the environment. And as you move up the food chain to other wildlife that consumes fish, as well as humans, the PCBs become more and more concentrated at every level in the food chain.
The EPA has warned against eating fish caught in the river between Troy and Hudson Falls, but people still do. Sullivan notes that PCBs are here to stay unless more is done. He says other parts of the river also need to be monitored since they're just as toxic as the area that was dredged.
We've called on EPA to require a formal investigation of the lower Hudson, 160 miles below the Troy Dam, where no remediation has been done, but where we know there is additional contamination because the fish in that lower Hudson remain unsafe to eat.
GE implemented two of three sediment collection programs this year. A third program, which includes deeper sediment sample collection, starts in 2024. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A November 20th federal appeals court decision ruled that only the U.S. Attorney General can bring a voting rights lawsuit under the Voting Rights Act. The decision, a radical departure from settled law, erects barriers to minority voters seeking fairness in federal court. The Eighth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals voted 2-1 to dismiss an Arkansas racial gerrymandering case, which diluted the voting power of black Arkansas voters, saying there was no private right of action for voters, groups of voters, or advocacy groups in challenges under Section 2 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Democracy Docket reports that the ruling applies to states covered by the Eighth Circuit: Arkansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota. A ruling in the Fifth Circuit earlier in November came to the opposite conclusion and acknowledged the right of voters and groups to sue. According to a filing in the Arkansas case, in the past 40 years, there have been at least 182 successful VRA Section 2 cases. Of those cases, only 15 were brought solely by the U.S. Attorney General. The U.S. Supreme Court's Milligan case earlier this year was brought by voters and advocacy groups, suggesting that the Eighth Circuit went rogue in its decision. But in the meantime, it may affect fair maps and proper representation for millions of minority voters. We have links to the ruling and analysis at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Veal.
Next, we hear from Hudson Valley-based singer Sandy Bell. Her 2023 album is called Entelechy, and this song is Monster Trying to Be a Lover.
Became
And I'm here on behalf of Lights Out Norlight. Lights Out Norlight is, it's not a, yeah. We are here for today's hearing about the application of the Bevel Amendment to Norlight. Norlight has been utilizing this amendment, which was meant to be a temporary thing back in the 90s, for 30 years. And there are massive piles of hazardous waste dust that the DEC has finally come forward to regulate and hopefully to take away from Norlight. This dust has been spreading into surrounding communities for all those decades, and people have been yelling from the rooftops demanding that this and other types of changes similar to it take place and protect the general population. So today we have three quick speakers before we go into the hearing itself. Our first one is Dr. David Carpenter. He is the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany and a expert in his field.
I'm a public health physician, and my job then is to do what I can to prevent human disease resulting from environmental exposures. And that's why I'm here tonight. So the the dust that comes from the Norlite plant is basically fly ash. It's what's left over from burning and from the incineration of a whole variety of chemicals. Fly ash is a very dangerous chemical, a mixture of chemicals. It has particularly heavy metals, arsenic, lead, chromium, copper, things that cause cancer, things that cause nervous system effects. It has polyaromatic hydrocarbons. That's the cancer-causing chemicals that are part of heavy oils. And particularly it has dioxins because they're the product of combustion. They're known human carcinogens, and they actually do a whole variety of other things besides causing cancer. So the issue here is, will DEC finally put all of this hazardous material in a secure landfill rather than putting it in what they call blocks, which is basically a type of concrete? Anybody that knows about concrete knows that they don't. Concrete doesn't last forever. It degrades. It decays. And if these blocks release all of those hazardous chemicals, the whole community, wherever the blocks are sold, a wider community is going to be adversely impacted. So I urge DEC to take care of this hazardous waste and treat it as it should be, hazardous waste. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Carpenter. Our next speaker will be Ed Sokol. Ed is a lifelong resident of the neighborhood around Norlite. He has had direct experience with the fly ash and other forms of toxins coming off of Norlite for years, and I'm going to let him speak for himself.
What good is him speaking if we can't hear him?
Gross some ears. Hello, my name is Ed Sokol. I live at 9 Etzel Place in Cohoes. It's only a couple hundred yards from Norlite, a couple of football fields. I've had problems with Norlite for the last 40 years. The judge requested some reasons why Norlite shouldn't mix the ash into their product. And I'll give you a couple reasons. The reasons are common sense reasons. Just imagine if 9/11 Twin Towers were constructed with Norlite block mix. Imagine all the pollution, the dust down the streets of New York City, dust on all of the first responders, on the cars, on the sidewalks, lingering for weeks, and even being silica dust. Not ordinary cement dust, which is dangerous in itself, but silica dust, which is much more, extremely more harmful. What if a building was built in a populated area with Norlite block mix? Then that building had to be imploded, creating silica dust that the people will breathe unknowingly. Can you imagine a do-it-yourself homeowner deciding he wants to build an outside entrance to his building, not knowing that the foundation was made from block mix from Norlite? He saws through the wall to make the entrance, dust blowing from the saw, creating dust throughout the basement. Later on, maybe his wife and children decide to clean it up, breathing this silica dust. What about the residual dust on the blocks that people handle? What about all the dust escaping from the 18-wheel trucks that pick up the block mix from Norlite? These trucks are 40, 50 feet long. They're covered, they're filled to the top, covered with canvas. This canvas is loose on both sides. The truck travels 40, 50 to 60 miles an hour down the highway with silica dust escaping on both sides of the truck. This truck travels for hundreds of miles, picking up dust, distributing all over populated areas. This block mix is also sold to driveway contractors as a base for their blocktop. What if this driveway is near an owner's drinking well or garden? The rainwater washes harmful chemicals into the water, into the well water, onto the root vegetables. Years ago, the health department told us to peel root vegetables and wash above ground vegetables thoroughly because of Norlite. Why aren't the block mix marked? They're hazardous material. They contain silica and all other metals. Why aren't they marked? Years ago, you had treated lumber made from arsenic and formaldehyde, all of those, every piece of those lumber were marked. Why aren't the block mix marked? For the past 30 to 40 years, Norlite was unable to contain the fugitive dust that they create. Silica dust escaping the conveyors, dust created at the end of the conveyors, piles uncovered, the wind blowing silica dust on people's property, trucks and front loaders creating dust when moving the block mix. All this has been proven by DEC, by documentation and lawsuits. We, the public, deserve the right to breathe clean air. This has not happened in the last 30 to 40 years. Please stop the dispersal of toxic fly ash from Norlite as block mix by revoking their Belleville exclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. So our third and final speaker is Chris Savinsky. He is a local resident and a scientist and a cancer researcher.
Okay. Hi, everyone. It's a lot of new faces out there that I'm not used to seeing at these kinds of meetings. So welcome. My name's Chris Savinsky. I live a little less than a mile down the road from Norlite, where I've been raising four kids with my wife, Stacy, for the past 17 years. From the moment we moved in and we started to ask questions about what was that facility down the road, we started to find unsettling answers. And those answers have really gotten us to this point today, where it's clear that there's danger to the local residents as a result of those huge piles, both of the aggregate product and also of the block mix that is essentially the garbage that is not the clean steam that comes from the top of the kilns stacks. So the other thing I wanted to mention is I have no interest in people losing their jobs. You know, we're here tonight to talk about amending the permit that Norlite has to store these piles on their facilities and to use it in block mix. There are plenty of